to Too Much Scrolling for February 11th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Adonis, God of Beauty and Desire.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. All right. Yes, Chip, this is Valentine's Day week. Happy Valentine's Day to all of our listeners. And you are once again on the phone, not in the studio.
Steve, I just wanted to tell you that it's warm. And as I am sunning my body and getting prepared for Valentine's Day so I can share my gifts with the world, yeah, I just want to let you know that I'll be ready. I'll be ready. Flowers, chocolates. What do I need to do, Steve?
Romantic movie. Do you have any independent films that are very romantic? We'll get to those in a minute.
Oh, good Lord.
Maybe the list is not that romantic this year.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. It is February. It is Black History Month here in the United States, and it's Oscar season. We just got through the Oscar celebration on Sunday, so I decided that it was time for me to finally watch one of the Oscar winners. This is from 2018. I sat down and watched Black Klansman, finally.
All right. Well, finally you did. We reviewed it when it came out.
2 years ago.
Yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts about it, and tell me a little bit about what this movie is about.
The story here is a true story. An officer in Colorado Springs, Colorado, named Ron Stallworth, really and truly became a part of the Ku Klux Klan branch in Colorado, and he is a black man working as a police officer, and he infiltrated the Klan in Colorado.
This happened in 1970s, right?
Yes, this happened in the late 1970s, so this is a very tumultuous time in race relations, but Spike Lee here absolutely is drawing a parallel between that tumultuous time and the tumultuous time that we have now.
And it gets even odder, because at some point they ask this gentleman, Ron Stallworth, this black man, to show up, and so he has to get someone else to do it, and who else to get it? Who would you get, Steve, other than Kylo Ren?
That's right. Adam Driver plays his partner in law enforcement, and he's the one that actually is the person that goes into these meetings of the Ku Klux Klan. Meanwhile, Ron Stallworth plays this character on the phone, and he actually makes a real solid connection with David Duke, who was the Grand Wizard of the Klan nationally. And they had a real relationship over the phone.
And I don't know if you know this, David Duke actually ran for president at one time. Can you believe that? Well, anyway.
It is pretty amazing.
This gets, truly an odd story.
And that's the word. The word that I used while I was watching this was the word ludicrous. This seems like a ridiculous idea. This should be a slapstick comedy, but the fact that this really happened. Now, of course, we're watching a fictionalization of this real story. This is, of course, very much the Spike Lee version of this idea, but these things really happened. This man still is walking around telling the story of when he changed the world just a little bit by becoming a black man in the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the Dave Chappelle comedy sketch that he had on the Chappelle Show, where a black man thought he was a black blind man thought he was he was a racist against himself in a way, and just and the absurdity that sure. But this is from what I remember, this is a this was a really good film. I enjoyed it, not because I enjoyed the material. The material is farcical. It certainly is an oddity. But the idea that there are real people out there that have difficulty with other people having their right to live, certainly something to think about and something that we all should look at with disdain.
It is a strong story. This story is very personal, and I am surprised at how well this was put together. This might be my favorite Spike Lee movie. I am not shocked that he won the Oscar for Best Screenplay for this film, because this story is, it's amazing because it's real, because this happened. And it's not a farce. It's not silly slapstick, but it could have been. I actually expected it to be funnier than it was. This is a very serious situation that these men find themselves in.
Sure.
I also got a chance to watch Terminator Dark Fate, a very, very different film from Black Klansman. This is the real and true sequel to Terminator 2 Judgment Day from 1991. This is the first time James Cameron and Linda Hamilton were back in the Terminator series. This one features Mackenzie Davis as the savior coming back from the future, and Arnold Schwarzenegger as an older Terminator who has lived his life in this timeline, and this is a really good Terminator movie.
Which is surprising, because when I saw that, when it came out, Steve, I had plenty of opportunities to see this film, and I chose not to. Well, so I'm glad you went out there and took one for the team, Steve.
The last few Terminator movies have not been good. They have not been good movies. Terminator 2 in 1991 was such a wonderful exploration of humanity and time travel and those adventures that we can have. The subsequent movies were not good. This is a good movie. It's definitely built for an audience, an Asian audience. The Chinese market definitely put up some of the money for this movie, and they came out in droves to watch this, because this is an action film built for a sensibility different from ours in a lot of ways. The uncanny valley of this, because I was watching it on TV instead of in a movie theater, I saw a lot of the flaws of the CGI in this. And by the end, it was pretty much just a video game that I was watching. There was very little humanity to these CGI characters. That's the only problem. But the storyline is there.
Tell us a little bit about the storyline, because it has sort of a, well, maybe something that we all can relate to, especially if we grew up in the West.
Yeah, I found an article on this, and this story of Terminator Dark Fate might actually be an allegory to the Bible and the story of Jesus. John Connor, being JC, might very well be in this story the savior that the world is looking for. There's so many other references. Obviously, Genesis, the word that was used in the previous film, is biblical. And the idea of John Connor's mother being impregnated by an angel who came down from somewhere and is magical. Okay, it was time travel in the Terminator.
Is her name Mary?
She is not Mary. But she is a single mom raising this possible savior of the world.
Is he a carpenter?
No, remember, he's a hacker. He's a 20th century. He's doing the ATM thing where he's hacking stuff. This is fascinating to me. Whenever a movie can do some allegory and we can go into it just looking at it as an action film, or we can go deeper. The other Terminator that comes back from the future is named Gabriel, like as in the angel Gabriel.
What?
And things happen that are very interesting. I liked this movie very much. I liked it so much better than Genesis. Even though Matt Smith was in Genesis, his part was terrible. This was a good Terminator movie. I also got a chance to watch XFL football on Saturday afternoon, Chip.
Well, somebody had to, Steve. Tell us a little bit about it.
I love independent film. I love independent sporting leagues, too. The XFL is the Vince McMahon WWE trying once again to revolutionize and revitalize professional football. This is season 2 of the XFL football.
They had a long break, Steve.
Yeah, season one was in 2001, 19 years ago.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Because I do remember the XFL.
Mm-hmm. It was a failed experiment in 2001, and we'll see how well they can pull it off this year. The idea is to change the game. There's a lot of kids who are not playing football in our area. There's a lot of questions about the health of players as they go through, from a very young age, battling injury and especially concussion. And the question of whether or not professional football is going to survive that. The XFL is looking at some of those things and revolutionizing, changing some of the rules. The new kickoff formation is very interesting. They are doing it in a much more safe way, so there's less concussion possibilities. There's a dedicated referee for ball placement between plays so that there's a lot more action in this league. And the point after attempts can be run in or thrown into the end zone, 1 point from the 2-yard line, 2 points from the 5-yard line, or a team can choose to get 3 points by getting the ball into the end zone from the 10-yard line.
So what were the teams doing? What were they choosing?
Most of them were choosing, well, it was different. It was different. The math was different depending on the score of the game. So all three options were taken on Saturday, depending on how far behind they were in the score. So this is a way for them to catch up score-wise. And some of them were successful and some of them were not. This is trying to get more action into football. A lot of people outside of the United States look at American football as a boring sport because there's so much standing around, and they're trying to eliminate that with some of these rule changes, and they're trying to solve some of the safety issues. And I have high expectations for the XFL, but I'm really taking it with a grain of salt. My arena football league really doesn't exist anymore. And I would love to have an alternative to professional sports. This seems like an interesting idea. I hope that they can make it happen.
Well, you know, I just watched the tried and true, Steve. I ended up watching Duke and Carolina play and watched an entire bar cheer as we kept going into overtime and last second shots. All I can say is good luck, XFL.
But that was basketball, right?
It was basketball, and okay. It's basketball season. Yeah. And March Madness is coming up in just, we're probably looking at 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
The tournament starts, and we'll have a championship at the end of March. And there's probably not a better countdown to put together a champion than college basketball. I mean, professional basketball is wonderful when you get to the playoffs, but college basketball, it's one and done, man. You lose, you're out. And there's so many nuances. The beauty of it is it starts off with 65 teams, and they play each other. And in fact, there's more than 65 now, but it doesn't really matter. They play each other, and they eventually get down to a Final Four, and they play each other and get to a championship. So it's one and done. You win, you advance. Good stuff.
There you go. Stacey saw Rabid. This is a horror movie.
Hi all, I'm back with another horror to recommend. This time it's Rabid, the Soska Sisters remake of the classic Cronenberg film of the same name, which has come out on Blu-ray. In case you haven't seen the original, Rabid is the story of Rose, who after undergoing life-altering injuries in her face, is given a new lease of life and a perfect face by a mysterious clinic, which comes with a cost that might be too cruel to bear. Now, though this is a remake, it most definitely has the Soska stamp on it. Having switched the gaze of the film from male to female, it gives the viewer a more intimate understanding of Rose and what she's going through. She's also been given more of a sense of urgency and is no longer just the passive victim of her own story, as she pretty much was in the 1977 original, which makes her more interesting in my opinion, as well as updating her story for modern times and sensibilities. The film isn't happening to her, she is an active part of this film, which is great. This is very much a love letter to Cronenberg, of course, and the Soskas make this clear with all the little nods to him and his work throughout the film, which are great fun to spot as you watch if you happen to be a really big fan like me. But if you've never seen the original or any of his other work, there's nothing to fear. This modern version of what I consider a classic body horror is accessible and thoroughly enjoyable whether you saw the original Rabid or not. The superb Soskas' modern take on Rabid is colourful and slick horror, with plenty of gore and snappy lines, firmly squared at the ills of today's society. It's well worth a watch, and if you've got time for a double bill of both versions, that'll make for one heck of a night. As always, if you want to hear more ramblings about film, geekery and more, you can follow me on Twitter, @filmswithstacey, where you can also find a link to my website for longer film and TV reviews. Until next time.
Thank you, Stacey. I look forward to your reviews going forward into 2020. Thank you for watching Rabid for us. Opening this week, we've got some movies. The first one...
Steve, I think this movie came out a long time ago, did it?
No, it was supposed to come out last year in October. The first trailer was released in April of 2019, but the first trailer was ridiculed by everybody who saw it. So they went back and spent an extra $5 million to fix the graphics. And this week we finally get to see the results. The Sonic the Hedgehog movie is finally hitting theaters.
The studio must have had a lot of faith in this film because they basically said, hey, listen, our graphics do not look up to modern standards. Mm-hmm. People are not enjoying this. We're going to go back and we're going to fix the graphics because we have faith in this movie.
Well, we've got Jim Carrey and James Marsden in this, so it's got big potential. And Sonic the Hedgehog is very popular, right?
Is it popular, Steve?
I don't know!
I don't think your kids know Sonic the Hedgehog, do they?
Not nearly as well as they know Mario Brothers. The Sega brand, they really hung their hat on this character, this intellectual property, Sonic the Hedgehog. And is it popular 20, 30 years down the road? I don't know.
I have no idea, Steve. But anyway, it's coming out. And so is there anything else I can watch, Steve?
There are plenty of independent and interesting films coming out this week.
The Plane.
I don't think that line's going to be in this one, Chip.
What?
The Blumhouse horror adaptation of the 70s TV show Fantasy Island is coming to our screens this week. And no, Chip, there is no tattoo in this version of Fantasy Island.
I'm Mr. Rourke, your host.
Yes, welcome. Michael Pena is playing Mr. Rourke, which is pretty perfect, I gotta say. But I don't know what we're gonna see in this. Blumhouse is known for very creepy, gory horror on a shoestring budget. And this is, I look forward to hearing what Stacey has to say about this one, but I'm not really a horror fan.
This looks like a very interesting story. The story is you're going to get what you want. You go to Fantasy Island. You say, this is what I want to experience. And then at some point, there is some kind of moral that's being played because what you want is probably not what you really want.
Right. That's the original story from the 70s. This one is going to combine that with some gore and some horror. And what you get is maybe not what you expected because there's way more murder and death in this one than we expected from the 70s show.
That's because a person in the trailer is wishing that a friend of theirs was tortured, and then they got to watch him being tortured. That's where the real challenge comes in, is what you say that you would like to experience, when it's reality, it becomes a nightmare. And that truly is the dark part of Fantasy Island.
Steve, that is the theme, yeah.
There are plenty of love movies. Let's talk a little bit about them.
Yeah, it must be Valentine's Day. The Valentine's Day movies are coming out. The first one is called The Photograph. This is a series of intertwining love stories set in the past and the present. This looks lovely.
Oh, here you go. All right, Steve, what about for those marriages that are probably not working as strongly as they should?
Yes, we finally get on screen Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Will Ferrell as a married couple. This is the movie Downhill, the story of a midlife crisis and a marriage very much going downhill. Get it?
I don't think there's any winning there, Steve. All right, Steve, what about...
It might be funny. Will Ferrell is a funny man. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a funny woman. This is a story of a family on a ski vacation. Get it? Downhill.
All right, Steve. Qui-Gon Jinn is going to watch somebody have, cancer. And I guess it's a love story from a different point of view.
From a certain point of view. This is a love story.
Ultimately, I think he's got a certain set of skills, Steve.
And it's not cancer treatment. Yes, a husband and wife going through cancer. This looks sad. It's called Ordinary Love. and the story of, you know, a lot of people go through a lot of challenges and they get through them. That's what the story is here.
What better way to celebrate Valentine's Day? Steve, are there any low-budget spy movies that are about a guy just wanting to live an ordinary life?
Yeah, this is a very interesting one. This is called Spy Intervention, and it's the story of a spy who is living a life, has a wife, and then the spy agency decides that he needs to go undercover with a different woman and live a life undercover. And this is a love story. This is a very low-budget movie. The graphics in this, my children could have made these on their computers at home.
Well, how lovely. What about a movie that may have been have a lot of dust and may have been found in the back corners of the archive, Steve?
Yes. A studio somewhere found a copy of What About Love? This is the story of two young lovers changing the lives of their parents when their parents learn from the joyous experience of their kids. This is some young people and their parents, Sharon Stone and Andy Garcia. This was filmed in 2012. This film is 8 years old, and it's coming out this week for Valentine's Day.
How about an odd, low-budget film that maybe talks about the First Lady, Steve?
Yes, there is a very low-budget comedy, ish, called First Lady. This is the story of a woman not married to the president who is running a campaign to become the First Lady of the United States. This features Corbin Burnson, you know, from L.A. Law.
All right. Well, that's out there. Steve, yeah. Let's get down to probably with the best film.
Okay.
For this is the one where three people, mm-hmm. they have a goal, Steve, Valentine's Day. What are they going to do?
Yes, this movie is called Come As You Are. It's the story of three young men with disabilities who are going on a road trip to experience life, and especially sex, because they don't have much opportunity for love in their situation. So they are going to go to Montreal.
To a brothel.
Uh-huh.
That caters to their needs.
And that's a beautiful story. That's a wonderful story that men have the ability to go and have their needs met, even the disabled members of our society. That's beautiful.
And this is a comedy. And it looks like
so silly.
It's such a joyful place. Steve, is there a movie about something that just... why is there a movie about this?
You're right. This one's called Buffaloed. It's about a young lady who lives in Buffalo, New York, and is kind of a artist type.
She's a debt collector, Steve.
And she becomes a movie about debt collector. I think this exists because the young lady in question is wonderful. I look forward to her career after this movie, but I'm not going to spend time watching Buffaloed, the story of debt collectors.
Well, Steve, if I could watch a family suffer... and have good and bad times. Is there a movie for me?
Yes, there is. The Kindness of Strangers. This is the story of a mother who finds that her son has been abused by her husband, so they choose to leave the home and become homeless. And the struggle of those situations in our society right now, those struggles are real. And the theme here is you can rely on kindness. There are kind people who will help you, and you just need to find the help that you need. This is, I'm sure it's a beautiful story, but heart-wrenching.
You'll cry.
I don't know, Steve, about laughing. Yeah.
Let's get down to a real love story where your girlfriend may just come and rip your house apart. Steve, is there one like that?
Yes, there is a very independent horror film called After Midnight. This is the story of a man whose house is being destroyed at night, and his girlfriend has left him. And the question at the end of the trailer is this a werewolf movie? Is she some sort of supernatural creature that at night after midnight is tearing the house apart. This is
yes.
independent film at its best, I think.
It looks scary, Steve.
It does.
Steve, are there a couple of actors who need to go for a role and potentially have a story there?
Yes, there's a movie called Eve, which is very hard to look up on the internet, by the way. This is the story of an actress trying to get the role of Eve in a screen adaptation of Paradise Lost. And somebody is threatening her because somebody is trying to get this role instead of her. And there's a whole psychological question mark to the trailer whether or not there is actually a second person involved or if this is all just in her head.
Well, we don't talk about Fight Club, Steve. Right. Steve, bring me back out. Give me a documentary that gives me some glamour.
Yes, there is a documentary coming out this week called The Times of Bill Cunningham. He is a legendary New York Times photographer, all about glamour and fashion. This looks like a joyous documentary. Did I hear Kristen Bell as the narrator in the trailer? I don't know.
It was loud when I was watching it. But I did say there was a lot of bicycle riding around New York. So there you go. This looks lovely.
That's a lot of movies to choose from. Hopefully there's something out there for you and your sweetheart to go out on Valentine's Day and have some entertainment.
Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. You have been continuing your study and you have picked up one of the TED books. This is Dan Ehrlich's Payoff, The Hidden Logic That Shapes Our Motivations. Tell us all about it.
All right, so this is by Dan Ehrlich. Dan Ehrlich is a professor at Duke University. I am in North Carolina, and Duke did win last Saturday, right, Steve? All right, so let's go ahead and celebrate this gentleman. He is a behavior economist. Behavior economists look at motivations of things, why we do what we do, and potentially how we could help individuals understand things or choose stronger action. We say we're rational beings, but why do we do irrational things at times? Well, Ehrlich has spent a lifetime studying this. And this is a short study on what motivates us. Why do we do what we do? And potentially how we can help ourselves make better decisions, properly motivate ourselves. And I really found this fascinating. It's incredibly insightful.
Motivation is one of the things that we talk about in education all the time. I'm always trying to find the right motivation for my students. Why would they need this information? Why would they want to pay attention? Motivation's challenging. It's different for everybody.
Well, it can be, and it changes during the day. It changes where you are in life. There's all sorts of factors at work, and let's use a business situation, because he actually has a talk about this. Steve and I are going to work on a project, and we're going to work on a project that's going to take a lot of hours. You know, like putting on a production, like at school, like Steve's doing right now. Steve asked me to come work with him, and you know, I'm there, and we're enjoying the work. There's an energy because we know there's a time frame that has to get done. And then eventually it's over with. Mm-hmm. And Steve, at the end of the week, says, you know what, Chip, you've worked really, really hard. Thank you so much. Here is a check for $673.12. That's a percentage of what this really meant to us. Thank you so much and goodbye. And I would look at that check and I would say, wow, that's $600. I really thank you. I like that. But it's certainly, it's not filling that need that I have. You know, I didn't come in and help on that amount for that extra 600 and whatever dollars it was. I came in because Steve really needed me and I was motivated to help him. And an alternative to that, and studies show that Steve could have turned around and said, Chip, I know you worked really, really hard. Let's all go out to dinner, you know, bring your girlfriend, and I'll bring my wife, and we'll go out and have a fancy dinner, and we'll spend some time celebrating this hard work that we put together. And something like that may actually fill me up on a deeper level. It basically acknowledges the sacrifice we made to get some project done or something done. It talks a little bit about the mission that we have, and this is a way to reward ourselves for doing something above and beyond. And if we're working with a large group of people, we all may have different motivations on why we do stuff, but we want to somehow try to figure out what we can do that really fills them up, what makes it worthwhile. And we have determined, while pay is certainly nice, at some point, it's more about acknowledgement. You can say, well, that pat on the back doesn't mean anything, but it really does. It means that you're valuable. You're doing something that's helping some mission that we all believe on. And we tend to respond better to acts of mission as opposed to, I'm sorry, I should call them, than just carrots, where we throw out, just dollar bills there. Mm-hmm. Not that raises aren't important, but what I am suggesting is that we work and we identify with something so much beyond that. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on what Dan's bringing out there?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, having that goal, having a finish line is something that is very important to getting a project together. If you don't have, if the goal is nebulous, if there is no end to it, it's very difficult to get motivated to move in the direction of what we think is right. That's the first thing that I need to set up with my students, is we have to have a goal. Why would we bother with this? Secondly, that motivation, that personal connection can be much more motivating than the dollar signs. Speaking as an educator, I don't make a lot of money, but that personal connection, those times, those memories that I build with my students and my peers, those are amazing.
Well, and I think that's where it also comes in. You know, Valentine's Day is coming up. And you're going to be with, potentially a person you care deeply about. And it's a great time to acknowledge them. That the idea of just being with that person and just saying, you meant a lot to me, and this is what you bring to my life. And then also being able to celebrate that time probably means a lot more than if you had a card and you threw in, your $20 bill or your $100 bill or $1,000 bill or whatever that thing is. That is those little celebrations you have in life. The birthdays. Birthdays come around as long as you're living, okay? But we celebrate them because we are acknowledging that you're a valuable person. You're a valuable person to our life. And if you had a person in your community that was having a birthday and no one acknowledged it, well, you could just see where that could be demotivating to a person. So this is where holidays come in. This is where, if somebody does well on an exam or something, you want to acknowledge it. This is where if you've met a certain goal in your life, you acknowledge it and celebrate it. These are the little things that fill you up and make a life worthwhile. I think that there is, this is certainly, our conversations go beyond the scope of this book, but it's in the spirit of this book. Dan really certainly has spent a lot of time articulating it. I'll give you one last part on it that actually is on a sadder note. Dan Ehrlich tells his story quite a bit. When he was young, he was in an accident, and his body, 70% of his body was burned. They had to wrap him, and so he didn't have any skin at that time. They had to wrap him up in bandages, and every day they had to remove those bandages, slather him with cream, and then rewrap him with bandages. And he talks about how painful that was, and you can't move, your body can't move, you can't bend your arms and stuff like that. It really was terrible, tragic. Anyway, when he was at Duke, there was a couple of kids who had that same sort of situation happen. They were burned. One of them passed away, but the mother wrote him a note. And the note was, listen, my child has had this happen to them. I know this happened to you. How would you suggest we work with my child to, keep the spirits up, keep hope, and to show that, you can move beyond. where you currently are, your limitations that work. And he, this is a touching chapter where he talks a lot about this, because how do you tell somebody that every time they rip off those bandages, you're going to be in incredible pain? And how are you going to tell this person that, you know, it's going to be years and years before you can learn to use your limbs again, even if you can, you may not be able to use them the way you used them before. And so, you know, how much information do you release to properly motivate him without demotivating this person? And I'm telling you right now, Dan is just a master at thinking these ideas. There's a reason why professors just spend a lot of time doing this stuff. And in fact, I mean, ultimately, he says one of the reasons he chose to be a professor was because the limitations of his hands. He can't really type the way he could type before this accident. He needs a lot of free time to go still deal with his injuries, even after all these years. So, you know, how do you move through your life to allow yourself to function the best way you can, given the set of circumstances you're currently in? So anyway, I'm telling you, man, there's just so much wonderful information you can glean from this. I highly suggest it. This is a very short read. I think it was like 3 hours on Audible. I do recommend it for any person who has any type of thoughts on this topic that we've discussed.
And everybody has ideas about motivations, and everybody needs motivation to move forward. You've got to have a reason to do the things that you're doing, and money is certainly a part of that conversation. There is certainly a money motivation, but it's not the ultimate thing. There's got to be some reason that you keep going.
And I'm going to give you we're all going to go to dinner, and I gave you $1,000, I gave you $5,000, I gave you $10,000 to go to dinner. Does it really make a difference if it's $5,000 or $10,000? You could probably, I mean, how much lobster and steak can you eat? So at some point, it's not about money. At some point, it's about something deeper. And I think that that is going to be what you can glean from this, that if you are working with people and you are trying to create the proper structure on working with people, that finding that mission, finding that specialness that makes your work life important is as important as determining the salaries.
And those connections and that community become a big part of that for me. That's Dan Ehrlich's Payoff, The Hidden Logic That Shapes Our Motivations.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll With It. Chip, have you been annoyed by Netflix and the preview autoplay that's been happening for the last couple of years?
Absolutely. All of a sudden you're watching something and it starts again.
And really loud. And many times I'm watching Netflix in bed and my wife is sleeping and I'm watching Netflix. I don't want some extra sound happening that I wasn't expecting. Finally, this week, you have control. You can go in and turn off the autoplay previews on the menu screen of Netflix and the autoplay next episode feature. So if you don't want the next episode to play, you finally have a check mark that you can click on that.
Well, we could probably do that a little bit more with YouTube, because you'll go in and you'll turn off autoplay, and that works for a while, but somehow it always flips back on. Who knows? Maybe I'm doing an update or something.
Crafty, aren't they? Remember Disney Plus? Are you still watching Disney Plus? Is there anything on there that you've been watching this week?
No.
Isn't that interesting?
You have this library available that I paid for. I'm assuming my kids are watching, and when I'm around them, I do think that they watch this. But now it's just another library, and how much are you going to spend for a library?
I have not looked at Disney Plus hardly at all this week. Remember we talked about at the beginning of the year, what sorts of things are we going to see from Disney Plus in 2020? They're originals. They had virtually nothing announced until this week, when they finally announced that they are moving several of their titles that were supposed to come out in 2021. They are coming out in 2020. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is coming to Disney Plus in August of 2020, Mandalorian Season 2 has officially been announced. It will be here in October. That was kind of a surprise. We weren't expecting that one this year. And WandaVision is being moved up to December of 2020. So there will be new stuff to watch on Disney Plus this year.
Well, that's interesting, and it doesn't surprise me, because what you're ending up doing is you're trying to create some momentum, so when your year-long subscription, I have a year-long subscription, comes due, that you'll be willing to renew for another year. Yeah. And as of right now, you know, there really isn't anything that I have to watch on there. It's just a library. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I think between Apple Plus and Disney Plus, and a lot of the other services, HBO Now or whatever it's turning into.
And the Max that's going to be coming out soon, the HBO Max that's going to have extra shows, and then the NBC Peacock that's going to have all their extra shows. There's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, but how many of you are you going to be willing to subscribe to, and why not just cancel them and take them on one at a time? And in fact, if I if my children couldn't force me to have some of these, I would cancel a lot of them, because there's really there's no reason to have them. You want to watch a show, and that's it.
Yep, I totally agree with you. I am down to as just the bare minimums of what show am I watching. I will give that service money for that month for that show, and then once that show is over, I'm going to move on to something else. Outlander is coming to Stars, so I'm going to have to get Stars again for Outlander. I think that's this week. I'll have to look that up. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yep. Maybe your travels will come to an end. Maybe all of the fun that you're having out there in the field, maybe you can come into the studio next week. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Adonis, god of desire and beauty. Steve, what is that around the corner? Is that a boar?
See you in the future.
I'm being attacked!